Bootstrapping, a Cobra Kai fanfic by Minocchio, read by GorillasGal86. Rating, explicit. Fandoms, Cobra Kai and Karate Kid. Relationship, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. Summary, in which the early 20s competing dumpster fires of Gotta Hustle Daniel and Gotta Take My Stepdad's Money and Burn It Johnny meet again. Chapter 31. Daniel folds his arms atop the table and raises his eyebrows. And Mr. Miyagi knows what he's doing. He's milking the moment for all it's worth, making him wait. Above them, Lucille clicks her tongue and collects the plates. "Oh, come on," says Daniel when it's been like 10 seconds. "Give me a break." Finally, he nods. "Was good." "Good? You gotta be kidding me. Good? That was great and you know it. Move over, swordfish. There's a new fish in the rules game and it's called Yellowtail." He lifts a shoulder. "Good fish. Must have been good fisherman." "Great fish. Must have been a great cook," counters Daniel. "What did you think of the capers? Have I sold you on the capers?" "And now you're the one fishing, Daniel," says his ma, returning to the table. She slaps his arm. "Fishing for compliments. The meal was good. He said it was good." "I'm not fishing for nothing. I'm looking for deserved recompense for the doubt that was instilled in me around this table. I just invented a whole new fusion cuisine here." "Arrogance is not an attractive quality. Are we to sing your praises for the rest of the evening?" "Have to take a rain check on that. I have a date later." Then Daniel realizes what he said and clears his throat. He lifts his arms and sits back on his hands, looking out the far window and trying not to grimace. But the damage is done. Mr. Miyagi says, "Oh?" And really drags a syllable out, the teasing sound overlapping with his ma's enthusiastic yammering. "A date? Oh, Daniel, that's great! What's her name? When do we get to meet her?" He shakes his head. "Oh, no. No, don't start. It's nothing, really. Forget I mentioned it. Really, please forget it." "Been long time since Daniel-san have girlfriend," says Mr. Miyagi. Daniel turns his head fully to glare at him. "Traitor," says his eyes. "But true," says Mr. Miyagi's, far too amused. "No, no, he's right. It's been too long, Daniel," says Lucille. "I've been worried about you working so much. How can you meet anyone when you look so tired all the time?" "Thanks," he says. "Thanks, Ma. I do just fine, actually. Really. Life requires balance." "Yeah, well, so does my checking account." "At least tell us what she's like." Daniel casts his eyes up to the ceiling and searches for words. "Well, he is a bafflingly persistent moron who is all heart and no common sense. He likes to laugh, maybe too much. He makes me laugh. He takes nothing seriously, which drives me up the wall, as much as it lets me breathe." Tall. They're tall. And blonde? Into aquariums? And an athlete, of sorts?" "An athlete," says Lucille, a little blankly. She looks around the table. "Well."
Yeah. And they, modeled for a while."
Which sounds more impressive out of context, even though it's still the funniest shit Daniel's ever heard. His mouth can't help but quirk even saying it aloud. The smile fades when he glances at Mr. Miyagi and notices his sharp gaze. Maybe the pronoun game isn't as subtle as he thought. No, surely this is something else. Daniel's just being paranoid. "Anyway, we're gonna go see the new Rocky movie later," he finishes quickly.
Lucille makes an exasperated noise. Daniel, you cannot take a young woman to see some brutal boxing film. Look, trust me. I think Pretty Woman is still playing at the Second Run Theater over in Van Nuys. I am not, he says flatly, going to see Pretty Woman. He can already hear the dumb jokes Johnny would make, casting Daniel as Julia Roberts and himself as Richard Gere. It pisses him off just thinking about it. He realizes he is getting annoyed at Johnny for a hypothetical joke he'll never have the opportunity to make, and decides maybe he is losing it after all. He really should get more sleep one of these days. Daniel, how can you expect to make a relationship work if you're not willing to compromise? Where has my romantic son gone? You used to be so sweet. I'm plenty sweet, bites out Daniel. Daniel's son knows date, says Mr. Miyagi to his ma. Trust his instincts. Yeah, yes, thank you, says Daniel. Welcome. But he meets Daniel's eyes, and his face promises they'll talk soon, which, great. That's just great. Later that evening, Daniel sits on the front steps of his apartment building in a pair of jeans and t-shirt, arms on his knees, and he surveys the situation. When you said you'd pick me up, he says, I thought you meant in a taxi. This is basically a taxi, says the idiot with the limousine. I mean, I'm paying some guy to drive us. Daniel nods slowly, sucking on his cheek. No way around it. This is looking perilously close to a Pretty Woman situation. Johnny is wearing a tux and everything. Look, what's the big deal? Says Johnny. This'll be fun. I've got beer back here. We can drink in the car. Johnny, it's like 10 minutes tops to the multiplex. He spreads his arms. You called this a date, man. I'm just following your lead. Is that what you're doing? Really? He narrows his eyes. And what's with the tux? Is this a Richard Gere thing? He looks at Daniel with confusion. The No Mercy guy? What's he got to do with anything? Daniel hangs his head. He stares at the cracked concrete between his sneakers and considers the day the other man's probably had. And he shuts his eyes. He sighs. All right, he says, standing up. He approaches the limo. What the hell? Except somehow, as soon as Johnny climbs in after Daniel and shuts the door, and they pull away from the curb, Daniel finds himself pinning him back against the wide leather seats. He pulls at his stupid suit jacket and shirt, dragging him forward until they are kissing. The dark interior of the limo is silent, utterly private, and he can hear every slight sound Johnny makes as he gets a hand on Daniel's ass and grinds up against him. His free hand pushes up the back of Daniel's shirt, and maybe they should say hell to the movie and just drive around all night fucking in the limo. Johnny laughs a little against his mouth. No way you're getting out of seeing this movie. You said you'd buy my ticket. And I'm expecting popcorn, motherfucker. Daniel's hot all over, and at least some of it is from the realization he'd said the last part aloud. He sits back on Johnny's lap and rakes a hand over his hair. He clears his throat and glances around, looking anywhere but at Johnny and his wrecked collar. It's a good look on him. Damn him. Daniel can't really pull off suits, and some part of him is sure it bodes ill for any potential prosperous future he could have. You said there were drinks in here? He says. In response, Johnny leans over, looping an arm around Daniel's waist so he doesn't tip off, and pulls open a previously unnoticed black mini fridge. He hands one to Daniel and takes one for himself, and then collapses back against the seat, seemingly content just to gaze at him. You, he says a bit dimly, are so hot like this. Daniel lets his eye roll guide his head back as he drinks the beer. Okay, so it turns out Rocky V is not romantic. Maybe it's Rocky's surfacing health problem, and the palpable anxiety in Adrian's voice as she talks to the white-coated doctors, which makes Daniel tense in the theater, all his focus shifting from the screen to Johnny beside him. Or maybe it's the Balboas losing all their money and falling back broke to their old neighborhood. All that hard-won progress reversed in an instant. Classic American story of you can fight all your life and never get ahead. And it makes something hard and ugly form in Daniel's stomach. Or maybe it's Rocky's son getting bullied and not a single adult doing anything to stop it. So the boy has to learn to throw a punch and ends up befriending the wrong people. And that's another classic tale, isn't it? Or maybe it's Rocky's fighter turning out to be a disloyal piece of shit who is only out for glory. In the safeness of the packed theater, Johnny's foot slides over, and he hooks his ankle around Daniel's. Daniel, who has slouched low in his seat, hand over his forehead, blinks at him. Johnny leans in. Is it just me, or does this really suck? And just like that, the movie is just a stupid movie again. Chapter 32. Checking balance, $260. Cash on hand, $33. Rent due soon. Bridie is slow at the garage. Their usual customer base either recovering from Thanksgiving or busy making life hell on retail workers across the valley. Juan wheels out from beneath the Chevy S10 they've been trying to diagnose for over 15 minutes and looks up at Daniel still bent over the hood. So it's not Walton's, he says. What's Walton's? Not the bar you work at. Daniel does not react, except to turn and toss his wrench back at the toolbox. He grabs a rag and wipes his fingers. And it's not Corners, or Raleigh's Place, or the Fat Pickle. Jesus Christ, what have you guys been doing? The world's lamest bar crawl? You get your way too old for all those bars, right? Juan tuts at him, heedless of Daniel's excellent position for dropping heavy machinery on his groin. Danny. No need to get jealous just because your balls haven't dropped yet. It'll happen, man. You just gotta be patient. His only response can be to put his foot on the other man's chest and do his best to shove him back beneath the truck. After work, he goes home and feeds Roxanne. He reheats leftovers from their Thanksgiving meal and gratefully crawls into bed to nap for an hour. He dreams of nothing. He wakes up and takes a shower and puts some leftovers in a little plastic tub to force on Johnny, and he drives to work. So what is it? He thinks in the odd spare moment of the night. Really, whenever he catches a glimpse of Johnny suffering by the door. Why this place? Why me? If Johnny just had some kind of kink for being treated badly, he could surely find better ways to fulfill it than an elaborate, long game involving part-time employment. Even for him, this is unlikely. And then there's the boyfriend talk, which, if it were to be taken at face value, leaves only the depressing likelihood that Johnny doesn't get off on being used and abused. He's just willing to put up with it. Ugh, says Daniel. God, I know, says Michelle. I can't believe we're here tonight. She stares out at the crowd with a hateful eye. This never would have happened if my parents didn't live locally. Why couldn't we be from San Luis Obispo? What's in San Luis Obispo? He asks. She shrugs moodily. This weekend? A girl from my power class. Power class? The class is called Power? And when she nods, he asks, intrigued, Accumulation or utility of? She slides him a look, Neither. It's about the concept of power as a societal force. Daniel abruptly loses interest. Look, why hasn't Johnny told me about his mom? Michelle abruptly remembers work. We shouldn't be standing around talking. Look at all the thirsty patrons. And she sidles away before he can demand answers. Want to go make out in the back room? Asks Johnny around 11, having wandered away from the door. The question would be obnoxious if it wasn't for the clear-eyed expectation in his eyes as he looks across the counter at Daniel. Never has a question been uttered with such sincerity. That it is the third time he is asked has not lessened its potency. The effect is kind of devastating, the way the entire week has been devastating. You wake up one day and realize you've been callously using a fucking human plush toy for sex. It's like, how are you supposed to recover from that? How are you supposed to look yourself in the mirror? He haphazardly pours a line of 5 shots. No, Michelle would castrate us. He wonders what kind of job Johnny could get and keep that wouldn't be unbearable for him, but he keeps coming up blank. Maybe the guy's not supposed to have a job. Maybe he's supposed to go through life reclining idly in a hammock and giving out great sex. A boy toy who can do a roundhouse. Hopefully his stepdad doesn't cut him off, Daniel thinks guiltily. He doesn't have the funds for a hammock, and nowhere to mount one besides. Daniel presses his fingers to his eyes hard for a couple seconds. When he drops his hand again, Johnny is back by the door, and painfully, obviously, trying not to glance his way. Nicole Simonson, with braces in the 9th grade, was more subtle with her crush. Just... shit. Shit. Daniel knocks a glass into the corner of the bar around midnight, and it shatters and cuts up his hand, and great, sure, why not? We're gonna need some more paper towels out here, he says to Michelle, pressing the last of the currant roll to his bleeding finger. It's only the finger. She watches the violent bloom of red across his makeshift bandage. Daniel, I think you need to go to the emergency room. And he's not even going to consider that. Nah, look, I just need to put pressure on it, wrap it up tight. So, be right back. Sorry. He adds, because it's a Friday, after all. Daniel! In the bathroom, he runs his hand under the faucet for about 5 seconds, before realizing the cut is definitely worse than he'd hoped, while standing in front of a bunch of gawking drunks. It stretches a good inch down his index finger, and it's bleeding very quickly, making a gory nightmare of the small sink. Stitches would cost so much. Shit, he mutters. Dude, says the guy wavering at the urinal 2 feet away. You are bleeding. Daniel bangs out of the bathroom and crosses the hall to the storeroom. Those damn huge bandages in the first aid kit. This had to be the reason they were there, right? But in the storeroom, he is intercepted by Johnny before he can get to the kit. Really not the time, man, he says, trying to sidestep him, but Johnny impatiently catches him, and they jockey for a couple stupid seconds. I looked in your coat pocket, says Johnny, freeing him up, and really? But they weren't in there. Why were... Good Christ, you get I'm bleeding here. Johnny doesn't even spare him a funny look, just drags the keys from his back pocket and takes him by the elbow. I really wonder about you sometimes, he says as he hauls him out to the car and shoves him in the passenger seat, and that's almost the worst of it. But it's hard to top the pain or the bleeding, which is ruining his jeans. Please don't, says Daniel. But Johnny only shakes his head before starting the car and continuing on and on and on to the hospital and the waiting bill. At the hospital, at the far end of a large room with 10 beds, Johnny is apparently overcome with panic that they'll make him leave because he's not family or something, and tries telling the nurse, who absolutely didn't ask, that they're brothers. She drops her clipboard to the side and gives him a hard look. Johnny Lawrence, I know your damn mother. Oh my God, says Daniel. Back on the mortal realm, he says to the nurse, ignore him, he's an idiot. If they assigned legal guardians to deal with that kind of thing, I'd be his. She says to Johnny, it's fine if you stay. When the doctor comes to do the stitches in a few minutes, they may ask you to head out to the waiting room. Then you're going to go, no arguing. They nod and mutter they won't, scout's honor and all that. And then she's whisking the curtain around his bed closed, cutting off the sight of the rest of Friday night's losers. All the times I imagined you confirming our relationship, you claiming to be my caretaker or whatever, while lying in the emergency room was not it. Says Johnny, turning idly on the stool. He looks down at the bed. The part where you call me an idiot is about right. I'm not confirming anything, says Daniel. I'm just feeling very sorry for myself at the moment and want someone to hold my hand, okay? So fucking get on with it, will you? And he flops his free, uninjured hand meaningfully on the bed. He doesn't look at Johnny. He doesn't look at anything. In fact, he shuts his eyes. After a moment, Johnny's large, warm hand picks his up and covers it. You're kind of mean sometimes, he says in the darkness of Daniel's eyelids. His stomach twists. I know. And he wants to say more, sorry, or something. But his throat closes up, and then he can't say anything. He didn't used to be like this. He knows he's never been the best son or friend, and that he's always had a short fuse. But he never used to be mean, he's pretty sure. He doesn't know if it's a habit or just part of who he is now, and sometimes it scares him. But then he thinks about how easy it is to be nice when you don't have to kill yourself just to live, when the bill for a few stitches isn't going to be a major setback, and he gets angry again. He's so angry all the time. But that's not Johnny's fault. Maybe it never was. Why are you here? He grates out, keeping his eyes closed. Says Johnny, his hand tightening a little. You weren't going to come. And even if you weren't being stupid about that, you need your right hand to shift. But it's all fucked up, so someone needed to drive you. Daniel breathes out through his nose, lips tightening against the impulse to snap back, because obviously that isn't what he meant. I meant, he says, enunciating with great care. Why are you doing all this? Why do you keep coming around? I know the sex is good, but you can get that anywhere. Thank you. Yeah. I can, says Johnny, and he really makes it hard. He really fucking does. Is this a pride thing? He asks the open darkness. Like, you have a bet with yourself and you don't want to lose? I beat you once in a stupid tournament and your brain decided you couldn't let it alone until you, what, tamed the enemy some other way? Johnny doesn't respond for a while. And if it wasn't for the creak of his stool turning back and forth, or the weight of his hand, he might even think the other man had left. You reach for me in your sleep, he says finally, and Daniel almost stops breathing. And even when you're pissed at me, you see me. Ever walk around all day, and it's like all day, and not a single person really looks at you? I work in the service industry, Johnny. Right, well, whatever. I'm just saying. It's been a shitty year. And the first moment I really feel like myself again was when I bumped into you at the bar. I don't know. I'm not really good at explaining things. He thinks about that. He thinks about Johnny's shitty year and his own shitty life. He thinks about his body reaching for something his mind wouldn't. And he thinks about the rare value of being seen. Daniel opens his eyes and looks at him. Chapter 33. On Saturday, he spends half an hour on the phone with Mr. Miyagi, begging off going over that day because his hand hurts too much to shift. Mr. Miyagi is accepting, but accepting in that special way where he also lets Daniel know he thinks he's full of shit. But of course, without actually saying full of shit, because he'd never. But Daniel knows the man, okay? Maybe he thinks Daniel is dodging him. I've got a row of stitches I can show you next time. He insists, waving his bandaged hand like that's going to do anything over the phone. I mean, if you don't believe me. Miyagi believed Daniel's son, and wish him speedy recovery. Perhaps model athlete friend can drive next time. He totally thinks Daniel is dodging him. He spends the morning lying around reading and listening to music. In the afternoon, he makes the epic walk to the grocery store because his hand really does hurt too much to shift. He thinks about making something to give his ma to eat for the following week and spends far too much time in the fancy cheese section of the store, shaking his head over the combination of prices and the selection. But when he gets home, he realizes he doesn't have any of the necessary cooking gear to do much more than boil water or fry a couple eggs, and is stymied. "Don't got much in the way of a life here, huh?" he says to Roxanne. The fish does not respond, or give any sign of being aware there is a life outside her tank. Some people are so lucky. The phone calls start not long after 9 o'clock. Daniel is in the bathroom when the first one goes through, so it's not that he even intended to let it go to the answering machine. When he walks back into the other room, Johnny's voice is already meandering over the line, immortalized on magnetic tape. "I think some of these people might actually be regulars. Like, I'm pretty sure I recognize them. Who the hell would pick this bar as a repeat experience? The TV is tiny, the stereo system is at least 2 decades old, and the pool tables are all fucked. Only reason to come back here more than once is the hot piece of ass behind the bar. I'm talking about Michelle, of course." Daniel shakes his head and collapses back in his armchair, reaching for his book. An hour and 10 minutes later, "You know, if this is what college is like, maybe I should give it a shot. Maybe I should become a college man. Nothing fancy. I could never do UCLA or whatever. But like, community college? I think I could do that. And it'd probably get Sid off my back for a while. Make it look like I'm taking the future seriously and all." Daniel winces slightly down at his book. He turns a page and keeps reading. He thinks if Johnny decides to go back to school, he'll totally gift him a shiny red apple to take to class. And maybe a blowjob or something. Maybe. An hour and a half later. "Well, it happened. Someone finally tried to start some shit. And you weren't even here to cause it." Daniel pauses in taking a drink, eyes flicking pointlessly over to the machine, like he might see through it and across the city to a shitty bar in Westwood. "I absolutely kicked ass, though. You should have seen it. Your boxers would have hit the floor right then and there, man." He rolls his eyes and finishes his drink. "But yeah, they did get a couple lucky shots. Sucker punch to the face. My eyes kind of swelling. But you know what they say. You think I look bad, you should see the other guy's knuckles. Ha." "And okay, that's really too much." Daniel reaches over and picks up the phone. "Did you just quote Rocky V into my machine? I thought we agreed to pretend that movie didn't exist in the continuity of the franchise." Yeah, but it was a really funny line, says Johnny after a startled pause. Wait, were you just sitting there listening to me and not picking up? Have you been doing that every time I call? No, says Daniel, sighing and sinking further down into his armchair, finger tucking into his book so he doesn't lose his place. He fixes his gaze on the far wall, considering. I'm usually not home, as you know. But you're home tonight. His tone is odd, a little stilted. Daniel, feeling, of all things, almost nervous, decides to take a stab in the dark. Yeah, so. He rocks the chair a little. Maybe you should come over after you're done there and let me tend to your wounds. I've got an amazing bag of frozen peas here. Its restorative properties are really going to knock your socks off. I can come over right now, says Johnny immediately. It should make him smile. He shakes his head and rocks the chair again. Johnny, job? Not actually one of those things you get to dictate your own hours on. Okay. Said like he didn't really believe it, but he is going to tolerate Daniel's bizarre rules as a favor. But you're not going to, like, change your mind or fall asleep before I get there, right? I'll be up, promises Daniel into the phone. He shifts a little and adds, low, I'm waiting for you. Oh, Christ, you weren't kidding, says Daniel, letting Johnny into the apartment. Did you even put ice on that? Yeah, of course I put ice on it. It just didn't do much. But despite the disfiguring bruise, he is almost pleased with himself as he takes off his shoes. This attitude only seems to increase as Daniel drags him over to the living room and sits him down in the armchair. His eye has mostly swelled shut, giving him a slightly deranged air as he grins up at Daniel. Daniel goes to retrieve the promised bag of frozen peas. He thinks about throwing them at Johnny's dopey golden head, but at the last second decides to straddle his lap instead. What are you so smug about? He asks, pressing the bag to his eye. You got hit. Hardly impressive. Maybe learn how to duck, and we'll see where my boxers go. He slings his arm around Daniel's hips. Maybe I'm smug because I've got Daniel LaRusso tending my injuries, and the other guy is probably just passed out on the floor of somebody's bathroom. And before Daniel can formulate a response to that, he adds, Now just throw on a sexy nurse outfit. Ow! Because Daniel has lifted the bag to lightly flick his bruise. You brought that on yourself, he informs him, but then he feels a little like a dick, so he lifts the bag again and replaces it with his lips. When he sits back, Johnny is staring at him, face having gone serious. He almost, Daniel thinks, looks scared of him. Imagine anyone being scared of him. He doesn't like it. Fear has no place in any proper relationship. It's one of his unmovable gut beliefs. Why he's always giving so much grief back to his priests. People shouldn't fear God, and they shouldn't have to fear each other. And yet they do, all the time. But fear can only exist in the absence of a properly articulated love. He clears his throat and reaches up with his free hand, combing Johnny's hair back from his forehead so it doesn't get iced. First me with my hand, now you with a black eye. I don't know, Johnny. Think we should find a different line of work? Maybe something a little less hazardous? I kind of get in fights wherever I go. Maybe you should work on that, he says dryly. I don't do it on purpose, he defends. People are just stupid. He kisses him then, slow and light. He murmurs against his lips. Your hands can be put to better use, I think. Johnny tips his head up to capture his lips again. He pauses. Are you saying I should be a porn star? Daniel counts to three in his head. Okay, yeah, that's it. He climbs off the other man, tugging easily out of his protesting grip. He tosses the pack of peas in the direction of the sink, misses, whatever, and turns to pull Johnny up. You're coming to church with me tomorrow.
What?
Johnny almost stumbles on the way into the bedroom.
Daniel, what? No, that's... I mean, we can have breakfast, sure, and then I'll maybe drive you, your hand and all. But church, that's not really my thing. Daniel?
He pulls him into another fierce kiss, and they fall back onto the bed, legs tangling. Daniel can't stop kissing him, breathing him in. He rolls them and breaks the kiss, looks into his eyes, and says, "Come on, Johnny. You know you like me on my knees." Johnny's breath hitches. He looks a little overwhelmed and very confused. "Is this still about church?" He smirks and slides down his body to where he is diamond hard for Daniel. He glances up to make sure he's watching him. He is. Like he couldn't put his eyes anywhere else, even if the apartment was on fire around them. "Feel free to sing my praises," says Daniel. And Johnny does, at length. Turns out the boy is a natural-born devotee. Chapter 34. Daniel genuflects and slides in next to his waiting mother. Johnny pauses at the end of the pew, uncertain, and he pulls his arm before the man decides to drop and awkwardly cross himself. He'd probably go the wrong way, and it'd just attract more attention. "Oh, hello," says Lucille a little blankly, leaning past Daniel to look at Johnny. "Hi," says Johnny, and he's hunching his shoulders a little, which really accomplishes nothing but somehow making him look larger as he shuffles into the pew next to Daniel. "Who's your friend, Daniel?" She tilts her head. "You look familiar." Johnny startles slightly as Father Hall and all his finery passes by on his way down to the sanctuary. "This is Johnny, Johnny Lawrence," says Daniel, feigning ease. He pretends not to notice his mom think about the name, remember the tournament, flick her eyes up to Johnny's hastily combed blonde mop, have a crashing revelation in the middle of the procession.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. LaRusso,"
says Johnny, oblivious.
"Uh-huh,"
says Lucille faintly.
"In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit,"
says Father Hall over the church.
"Amen.
The Lord be with you, and also with you." He maybe should have told Johnny he didn't need to nod along through everything. That only just draws attention to his unfamiliarity with the proceedings. They get through the first prayer, and they all sit. Lucille hisses out of the corner of her mouth.
"Daniel, have you lost your mind?"
"Don't know what you're talking about,"
he whispers back. To his right, Johnny is clearly trying not to fidget.
"If this is a joke," says his ma,
"it's not funny. Do you see me laughing?
You want me to get off your back about dating? Get off your back. You don't need to go around making a show of yourself."
Daniel's face has steadily warmed throughout this, but he sticks to his guns.
"I'm not making a show of anything. I just thought I'd introduce him to the big guy."
She sounds abruptly appalled and terrified.
"You are not introducing him to the Father."
"What? No, the other big guy. God."
"Wait, God's here?"
asks Johnny in a freaked out undertone. Apparently he's through pretending he can't hear them. They stand again to sing the Alleluia, Johnny bobbing up half a beat later. Daniel can hear him half muttering under his breath during the song, like he thinks it's better to be seen moving his lips, even if he doesn't know the words. His ma continues to radiate stiff disapproval, and Johnny nervous mystification. But Daniel stubbornly focuses on the Mass,
Acting like something is normal and fine is the first step to it becoming normal and fine, right?
Right.
He just thought, this is a part of his life, and it has to mean something to share it. He doesn't have much else to share. Johnny kind of panics at the appearance of the collection plate and drops in a $50 bill. Daniel fights to maintain a straight face as he places his own tithing envelope on top of it.
"What's that?" whispers Johnny. "What's in there?"
"Makes it easier for my accounting." Johnny leans forward to watch the progress of the plate. He looks back at Daniel.
"Wait, you're always broke. How much are you giving these people?"
Daniel shushes him, and his eyebrows shoot up.
"Oh my God!"
Daniel shushes him again, more firmly. "Not in church, Johnny." Johnny knows about half the words to the Lord's Prayer, so that's something. Daniel figures he probably heard it in a movie. At the sign of peace, Lucille reaches across her son, ignoring his hand entirely, and grabs Johnny's. He meets her gaze with some trepidation.
"Peace be with you," she says, her eyes narrow and searching.
"Yeah, you too," he replies. It is several long seconds before she lets go of his hand, and she casts Daniel an unreadable look as she subsides. His stomach tightens. As the congregation chants about the Lamb of God, Johnny leans over and whispers, "Is this the part where I get to drink wine?" Daniel doesn't sigh because his ma needs to see a united front. He whispers back,
"One, it's the blood of Christ. Two, you're not drinking anything. Heathens don't take communion."
Johnny turns his head fully to stare at him.
"You're not joking, are you?"
"Nope."
"Fine. Who wants to drink blood anyway? Freaky vampire stuff."
Johnny glances around and hunches down a little.
"Sorry."
And maybe Father Hall frowns at Daniel when he goes up to accept communion, because maybe he is failing to fully bite his grin when he accepts the wafer, but he figures the man has seen worse from him. By the time he returns to the pew, the smile is faded. He kneels down. His ma comes back and kneels beside him, and they don't speak or look at one another. There's no avoiding Father Hall standing at the door as they all file out. If there was a way to sneak Johnny out through the rectory or something, maybe. "Always good to see a new face, especially a young one," says Father Hall, reaching to shake Johnny's hand. He does a good job not staring at his eye. What a professional. Johnny returns the handshake and makes an awkward, non-committal sound. Daniel shoves his own hands in his pockets to stop himself from shoving him along. Beside him, Lucille is looking into the middle distance. This behavior has the opposite of the desired effect, causing the priest to look between the three of them. Several thoughts flicker of his face in quick succession. But in the end, all he says is, "A friend of the LaRusso's is always welcome." And he doesn't even know about the $50 donation. Daniel is reluctantly impressed.
"I'm gonna go get the car,"
says Johnny, jerking his thumb over his shoulder, even though they'd actually parked in the other direction. But Daniel just nods and waves, releasing him for the moment. When he turns back to his ma, she is watching him with a quietly stricken look. He clears his throat and raises his chin a little.
"So, we doing lunch?"
he says.
"For months, I feel like you've been slipping away,"
she says as if he hadn't spoken.
"Like I'm losing you. Or maybe you're trying to punish yourself.
And now this?" "The two things have nothing to do with each other," he says, staring at the church lawn. He doesn't know what else to say. That he's basically admitted to trying to punish himself registers only distantly. Like, huh, so that's what that was.
"Daniel, you know I don't... There's no problem... I don't have a problem with those... with that lifestyle. You know I don't judge."
and she reaches up and touches his temple, the corner of his eyes, so he can't help but meet her gaze. It's somehow worse than he thought, seeing the worry in them. "But I want you to be happy. How are you going to be happy like this?" He clears his throat and smooths down his tie. "I'm trying, Ma. This is me trying. I mean, Christ, I didn't make him sit through all of that for the laugh. I wanted..." What the fuck did he want from this? It had seemed so simple the previous night in the quiet of his apartment. He licks his lip. "Anyway, I thought you should meet him properly." "I met him when he was hurting you in that tournament. That was a long time ago. The boy has a black eye," says Lucille sharply. "Where'd he get it from? Running into a door?" He shakes his head, because now it's all getting mixed up. "So is it him you have a problem with, or is it the queer thing?" Her hand drops. "Don't call yourself that. I don't like it. And I especially don't like it used against my son." "What should I use then?" He doesn't ask. He puts his hands back in his pockets and looks around the church lawn with its lingering, milling bunches of people. Is it his imagination that they're all trying not to stare at them? It's gotta be, right? "I take it that's a no on the lunch," he says after a long pause. "It's been a long morning," she says, "and I think we both have a lot to think about." She's got tears in her eyes. He's making her almost cry in front of people, and all it took was being himself. Chapter 35, Days of Wine and Roses, 1990. He half expects, and is in no way prepared for, Daniel to freeze him out afterwards. Drop him at the nearest bus stop and drive off, his injured hand be damned. But he doesn't say anything as Johnny points the car towards home and starts driving. Johnny taps his fingers restlessly on the outside of the door as he pulls up to a red light. He glances at the unmoving portrait of grim perseverance in the passenger seat and kind of winces at the road. "Maybe she didn't realize," he says. "Like, maybe it's not too late to drag that cat back into the closet." "She realized," Daniel says, and his voice makes Johnny wince again. "It's that bad."
I'm sorry, man."
Daniel turns his head to look out the window, hiding his expression.
"How did your mom react when she found out?"
"There was an adjustment period. Mostly she laughed at me."
He thinks about it.
"And cried about how complicated surrogacy is."
Daniel blinks around at him, his confusion momentarily rousing him from his dead-eyed contemplation of the passing world.
"What?"
"For the grandkids I'm supposed to give her," he explains, and this makes Daniel slump again for some reason. Maybe he doesn't want kids. She kind of gets ahead of herself sometimes, gets a little carried away. "Imagine someone like that," mutters Daniel, rubbing his mouth with his fist, still looking out the window. And if Johnny was a better person, maybe he'd offer to back off or something. Leave Daniel alone to live his Johnny-free, pretend-straight life. He could work his two jobs and go out the third Saturday of every month to try and find someone with a passable dick. And that person would probably not realize what they have. Maybe not even give Daniel a blowjob or a decent reach around. And like, if this is what Daniel is like when he's getting good regular sex, Johnny can't imagine him without it. He'd probably shank someone with a wine corkscrew some night over the bar. Then he'll go to jail, and maybe Johnny will try and write him letters, but they won't be any good, won't say what he needs them to say, and the jail probably won't allow conjugal visits anyway. And then Daniel really will go insane and probably shank someone again, and but properly this time,
with like a sharpened toothbrush, and he'll end up in solitary confinement. And then he'll be like a beta fish in a pet store, alone in a tiny dish, barely able to summon the energy to flare at passing flashes of color. So no, actually. It's for the best if Johnny keeps dating him, like for his own good, and probably for the world at large. He hopes Daniel realizes this. How does he make him realize this? Here, pull over here, says Daniel suddenly, pointing at a passing strip mall. We're stopping in there. Johnny turns the car automatically. He parks and ducks his head to peer past the visor. Liquor store? Daniel pauses in the middle of unbuckling a seatbelt. He looks at Johnny directly, and he looks normal enough. But there's something about him that's still making Johnny feel like he should be tiptoeing. Maybe it's the church clothes that will never not be weird. He wants to reach over and violently ruffle his neatly combed hair. We've never done body shots together, have we? Says Daniel, like that's a regular thing to come out of his mouth on a Sunday afternoon. He could be talking about the traffic. Johnny tries to lean back casually against the door, but he forgets the window is down and his head sort of bobs back in the air. He straightens up, clears his throat. No, he says, completely cool. Don't think we have. Daniel nods and looks out the front of the liquor store with narrowed eyes. Salt. We got salt. So just limes and tequila, right? You got a preference?
I don't. Cuervo?
Daniel wrinkles his nose. Finally a crack in that freaky but hot pod person mask. He shakes his head at Johnny and throws open his door. Wealth is really wasted on you, you know that? You coming in? And Johnny is kind of hard in his slacks. He is not going in. So it's a couple hours later, and they've had several drinks, and Daniel has him stretched out in his boxers on the floor in his living room. He is kneeling over him, a lime wedge in hand. You gonna work with me here, Johnny? Be good? Yeah, here. He places a lime in Johnny's mouth, pulp side out, and quickly brushes a hand back over his forehead and hair, a peremptory caress. He bends and licks the dip of his throat and follows it up with some salt. This was such a good idea. It's crazy, I've never thought about it before. You ever do this? Johnny has taken body shots off some seriously hot babes in the past, but no one has ever taken a shot off him. He never realized what he's been missing out on. But having Daniel scrutinize his mostly naked body for the best location to do a shot from is making him question every choice he's ever made in life before now. I mean, pelvic cut like this, it's basically asking for someone to lick something off you. Says Daniel, and he picks up the bottle. You had to have had foreseen this. Maybe it was subconscious, I don't know. He runs his hand along Johnny's abdomen, thumb fitting along the dip in the muscle. All right, hold still. You ready? Johnny makes a vague, if somewhat desperate, affirming sound. And Daniel bends over him again, eyes meeting his for a flickering, smiling second, before he ducks to lick the salt off his neck with the tip of his tongue. He sweeps down his torso, and Johnny strains the muscles in his neck, trying to watch as he pours the tequila over his hip and bends to suck it up, mouth soft and hot. He makes another faint noise and lets his head fall against the floor. Daniel is back a second later, biting into the lime and taking it from Johnny's mouth. He is smirking slightly around it as he sits back on his heels. Johnny can't take it anymore. He sits up quickly and bites the lime wedge back, turns his head and spits it out, and claims Daniel's mouth, licking at the lingering sweet taste of the tequila on his tongue. Daniel's arms wind around his neck, and he pulls Johnny over him, knees sliding wide to let him in close. A chuckle starts in his chest, doesn't quite make it all the way out, just lends a warm timbre to his voice, as he turns his head and murmurs, "Make me feel so good, Johnny. How do you do that? How do you make it so good?" And Johnny can't respond except to kiss him harder, because that's it. Everything he's wanted. He's finally done it. Won the championship. Saved the day. Got the girl. His body is buzzing like he's had twice as much to drink than he has, burning wherever his skin touches Daniel's, and he is never, ever going to stop feeling like this. And then he just doesn't. For the next week, he barely goes back to his apartment. Whenever he is at Daniel's place, he has complete permission to pull him into a kiss whenever he likes, which is pretty much all the time, except for when Daniel is cooking or whatever. And even then he lets Johnny crowd him against the counter sometimes. And it's the very best, except for when Johnny gets burned by a splash of hot oil. But even that's not so bad, because Daniel wraps his wrist in cool, damp cloth. And yeah, he's calling him a moron, but he's using his fond voice. He does have one. So it's still good. They have a few drinks every afternoon before Daniel's shift. They have sex in the shower, if they're short on time, or in the bed if they have plenty of it. It's a delirious slip-slide of time for Johnny, marked only by the sound of Daniel saying his name, the press of his fingers against his hips, the glorious, centered feeling of being inside him. "Do you really think he hasn't noticed that you disappear every Tuesday?" asks Michelle on Wednesday. She stares at him like she's trying to see through the sides of his skull, and considering the paint job in there and finding it lacking. Johnny pauses, beer halfway to his mouth. "No, but, I mean, he hasn't said anything." His mom is responding to the treatment, so soon this is all going to be over, and there won't even be anything to talk about. It'll be so much easier to say she was sick than she is sick. "Yeah, but in case you didn't notice, he isn't really saying much of anything lately," she says, which makes Johnny glance down to the bar where Daniel's absently mixing up four margaritas. "His mom didn't take the news about us so great," he says, "because that has to be the reason." Michelle slides two drafts across the bar to a waiting guy and turns back to Johnny, expression faintly disbelieving. "Why would he come out to his mom?" she demands. "You don't do that. Who does that?"
"I did.
Kinda." He feels like he should get credit for not fleeing to Nevada, never returning.
"And that was fine."
She shakes her head, vehement enough to send her platinum fringe flying. She puts up an authoritative finger.
"What you do is, you walk the line. You don't hide anything, but you don't say anything either. Make them wonder. Don't deny. Never confirm. I mean, what business is it of theirs, anyway? None. And everyone is happier that way."
He sets his beer down and looks at her with surprise.
"I guess I assumed you'd be one of those loud pride types."
"My mother," she says flatly, "is a corporate lawyer. She has a very well-defined idea about what it takes for a woman to get ahead in the world, and I assure you, being gay does not play a part." She grabs his beer, even though he isn't quite done with it, and tosses it into the recycling. She pauses and glances down at Daniel.
"Wait, aren't they Catholic?"
"Yeah," says Johnny.
"Oh my God, he's insane."
He can't help but smile a little, because, well, Daniel.
"Yeah."
It's later in the week, late at night, and he's had a few. Daniel has insisted on driving them back home because he's had fewer. Johnny slumps in the passenger seat and watches the freeway corridor lights pass over his profile. The radio's on low, and everything seems muffled, softened, and safe. Another Thursday night, and you're hammered. says Daniel, staring carefully and not looking away from the road. The vigilance of a drunk driver. Any particular reason? Like, is there something on your mind? Something you want to share, maybe? You're so pretty, he says.
Oh boy.
He tries to sit up straight, so the seatbelt can stop digging into his ribs. He sniffs a bit and says, No, know what I thought? First time I saw you?
Jesus,
goes Daniel.
Let's see. Who's this punk? I'm gonna kick his ass?
No, I mean, yeah, okay, yeah, a bit. But also, no. He pictures him barefoot and loose on the beach at night. Tiny little knight in a red hoodie. It makes Johnny snort a little, smile sideways. I thought, this guy thinks he can do anything.
Well, sure learned my lesson,
says Daniel, which is weird as hell because, like, did he? He thinks such weird things about himself sometimes. He waits a couple minutes, and then he has a great idea.
Hey, hey, hey!
Hey, replies Daniel dryly.
Do you think it'd be possible to, like, I could fuck you and fall asleep inside you and wake up still inside you, and then we could keep fucking? Do you think we could do that?
It would be a perfect circle of sex. World record stuff. Daniel hits his indicator and takes his exit. Johnny, I appreciate your spirit, but I have to tell you, that sounds like it would be really uncomfortable for both parties.
Oh.
He heaves a sigh and puts his head back.
Hey, says Daniel, reaching over and poking the side of his face, like he thinks Johnny is falling asleep.
Hey, hey,
hey,
replies Johnny and reaches up to capture his hand. He holds it until it's time to shift gears. On Saturday, Daniel stays home again, and they crack open some beers around 3 p.m, and Johnny gets to spend the hours before a shift at the bar with a mostly boneless Daniel climbing all over him in the square of sunlight coming in through the living room window. They're both at their very best, sweet and hot, and Daniel takes him so good. Johnny sits up and runs his hands up Daniel's back, following the flex of muscle and unyielding shape of his ribs to cup his shoulder blades. He grinds up into him. He turns his face into his chest and sucks his nipple, eyes falling shut.
This is something real,
asks Daniel above him, voice rough and quiet.
Johnny,
doesn't it feel real? Is he doing something wrong? He adds a couple thrusts into the mix and is gratified when Daniel jolts a little. He rolls them without pulling out and keeps going, kissing Daniel into the floor until he's gasping, wordless, and overcome. Suck it, Pinocchio. Real boys get to make love to Daniel LaRusso and sleep in his bed afterwards, and wake up with him, and never even had to stop drinking or having fun to do it. The end of part 5.